Okay. When we left off, we were talking about some of your experiences in the circuit court. You gave us one really interesting example of that custody case.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other cases that you feel were very significant to your time on the bench?
Oh, absolutely. When I left the county division, which I was assigned for, I think, maybe 5 years, I came to the Chancery Division. Chancery is another whole world. It is one of the most dynamic experiences that you can have in terms of the judicial career, I believe, because it is very diverse, and incidentally, my whole career in the judiciary has been in civil, this various levels of civil litigation. And each time that I have gotten another assignment, it has been just a more complex assignment. So in Chancery, we do very complex litigation, and we do all kinds of across the board in terms of the legal spectrum, because Chancery is a equitable remedies court. So people, whether it's contract, whether it's an insurance case, it could even have some personal injury issues related to insurance, trust cases, employment cases, neighbors fighting over fence cases. Anything can come to Chancery because we do extraordinary remedies, and we do injunctions. And so, if a party has a conflict that requires them to request an injunction, they would come to Chancery. And people like to come to Chancery for whatever reason, because they think they get a more expeditious kind of experience. So, in Chancery, you got the range of courses, because it could, like I said, it could be any kind of issue, and if they need an injunction, they're going to show up in Chancery. So as a result of that, you know, one of the cases that I always laugh about is the Michael Jordan case. I had that case with the woman Karen Canoffo because they came in for injunctive relief, and that was my case. So I had that particular case for a long period of time. I had the I just recently, when I retired, because it was a class action case, not because they were asking for injunction, I did the Sun-Times case where they were talking about the circulation, the under-quoting of circulation figures, and I was able to settle that case and distribute a whole lot of funds to charitable organizations as a result of that. And then I did the Chicago Defender case, the trust case that related to the Chicago Defender. That was one of my cases. I was able to complete that. And I've had just a bevy of very interesting kinds of cases in the Chancery Division, because you get to deal with so many. You just never know what's going to come in. You know, they could be, you know, if they close the street, the people may come in for an injunction, and you get the case. I mean, that's how it works in Chancery. So, yes. So those are some of the kinds of cases that I had that I thought were, you know, very impactful. So,
is there one particular case though that you think is like a milestone for your career that maybe, or maybe one that really tested your ability as a judge, or one that really brought in all of those prior experiences?
Well, all of the cases test your experience as a judge, because you just really never know what the complexity is going to be. You know, you could get a case and you think, okay, it's just this, but then when you really get into the factual analysis of it, you find that you have to really just learn another whole branch of law, or you're dealing with complex or complicated lawyers, and you know you have to address those issues, or you're dealing with emotional issues, you know, or parties who have real emotional issues because of the dispute. So you're going to be challenged at different levels for different reasons, and the reason that I take the position, you know, I think that every case does that, and it depends on how you approach that particular case based on the facts. So I've just given you what I consider to be some notable cases in terms of the notoriety in the public, but some of the insurance defense cases have been extremely challenging, because in some instances you're dealing with, I don't know if you recall the case where those five women, there was an accident on one of the highways, and five women, they were driving somewhere, and five women were killed in this van. It was, it was a big deal on television. That case came up on an insurance coverage case. And why are insurance coverage cases important? Because if the people, the people who involve, it determines how much money they're going to get for the death of their loved ones. And so some of the carriers have a little money, and then some have a lot of money. So the question becomes, who is liable, and how does that in particular insurance policy trigger? And those are the decisions you have to make. If you make a decision that the insurance policy doesn't trigger, that means that these people who were injured in this very severe way, the families who lost loved ones, are not going to have any basis for getting compensated, because the insurance company didn't have any money. And of course the people, I mean, if you don't get the insurance, the people don't have any money to compensate the parties at the level of their loss. So those cases can be very, very challenging, because you have to make those kinds of decisions about who gets what, or if they get anything. Whether the insurance, you have to go look at the language of the insurance policy and make a determination if these facts triggered the operation of this policy. And of course, there are all kinds of exclusions. And does this exclusion apply? Does it not apply? So those cases can be very, very challenging. Coverage cases can because you're dealing with real life people, and you know how they have been injured in these cases. So that's why I said it's every case depends upon. I mean, some are more notable than others, but if you're doing what you're supposed to do as a judge, you look at each case individually and you apply the necessary application to the case. I've had some cases, and of course this is a developmental kind of thing. I mean, when you start out, things are more difficult as you get involved. But I can tell you in Chancery, the Chancery Division, it is always a challenging experience, because you always get issues that you have not encountered before and situations that you haven't dealt with. And of course, your responsibility is to be able to look at that situation, sift through the information, and come up with an objective analysis. Sometimes that you don't like, because you're dealing with people, but at the same time, you have to apply the law, or you have to create an area that will allow that to take place. So Chancery is probably one of the most appealed divisions in the circuit court. Everything goes up on appeal. Unfortunately, I've had good luck in those cases, and I've won a lot of my, most of my appellate cases. So, I mean, they've come back affirming me. That's what I mean.
In those 15 years that you were in the circuit court, did you notice a change over time? Was there anything that surprised you about from when you first started to this past summer when you ended? Any reflections on maybe the growth and development of the court?
Well, I certainly think that the court has become more diverse, and such certainly much more representative of the populations. And I do believe it has impacted how people view the court, because I think that people feel more comfortable in coming in the court. And I believe that they believe, because of the diversity and the focus of the court, that they are probably going to have a much better chance in assessing. And why is that? I mean, why should diversity make any difference in terms of justice? Because if you are dealing with people that you know and understand in terms of their community backgrounds and stuff, you're going to have a different perspective about that person. And that person, you're not going to be influenced by that. You're going to be able to use that in helping you, assist you in the process. Sometimes people walk in the room and they say, oh, no. I know I'm not going to get any justice just by looking at the person on the bench. They don't know anything about them, but they feel more comfortable if they come in and they see across the hall. You know, they feel different about the system, because they feel at least their views are being people know about them and their views are being heard. I mean, one of the things that you try to do, and the way I always tried to run my courtroom, was to make everybody comfortable. That didn't mean that I was going to rule for you, but you at least had the respect of knowing that when you came in the court, you were going to get the respect, you were going to have an opportunity to be heard, and then a decision was going to be made based upon the facts, not about who you were or who. Because, you know, there were some lawyers that I didn't like at all. I would rule for them if they had the facts. And there were some lawyers that I liked a lot. I would not rule for them if they did not have the facts. I mean, so but that has nothing to do with making people feel that the system is open and just, because people knew that I was going to listen to what they had to say. I was going to read their work, and I was going to rule based upon the facts. Nothing else, period. That was the way that it was going to go. And you want to get that kind of reputation. You want to have people to feel comfortable about coming into your courtroom. You want to have people to feel that while they are respected, that the decisions are going to be fair and equitable based upon the law and not on anything else. And I think that that's more of the kind of attitude that you see coming out of the court. I mean, the court has had several real scandals in it based upon that particular issue. We had the Gaylord thing, and that was like a very terrible thing, you know, where people were paying for what they got. And so, you know, you have to overcome those kinds of issues. You also had, you know, a sense of, you know, people feeling that because they were Black, Hispanic, or something else, that, you know, they were going to get a fair case. Well, now the court system has interpreters. They have people, you know, who deal with those particular issues, and people feel much more comfortable coming because they believe that, you know, the court system is going to be open and accessible to them. And that's what we really wanted to achieve. I think under the leadership of at least the last two chief judges in the system, I think the judges have felt that they are more supportive and that the system is more open for movement in the system. It used to be that if you came in, if you were Black and you came into the system, and you were sort of like regulated to certain kinds of courtrooms, you didn't get chancery. I mean, that was like an exclusive white male-oriented thing. Now, and no women. Now it's very diverse. They have women, they have Black people, they have Hispanic people, they have all kinds of people in the division, which is what it should be. You know, there should be nothing that's off the limit. If the people are able to handle the call, they should have an opportunity to go and practice in that area. You should not limit your experience. And fortunately, my experience has been a very positive one. I have always been able to move up in the system and get the assignments that I wanted, you know. What do you want to do? I want to go here. Good, go there. You know, and that's very helpful to you. You know, it makes you feel good about coming to work, and when you know you're in a, you know, you're like that. And I think the court system has opened up like that, both for the judges and for the people. I think that is a changing issue. As I indicated, I think there are some issues in the criminal justice system, you know, in terms of, you know, the disparity and in terms of, you know, who's convicted, who's in court, and where that goes. But that is not just a judicial issue. It's a whole systemic issue that has to be addressed. So I think, you know, race politics are always peripheral things around the court system. Our struggle in the judicial system is to maintain our impartiality and be able to look at the situation free of those influences, and that's what you have to strive for. And I think that's where the court system is going in terms of its leadership, in terms of the kind of judges, and in terms of the diversity that they're getting. And I think that has been one of the very positive factors about what has happened in the way that, you know, judges are put on the bench, the way the assignments are done. I think that's been a very positive change.
So now that you've retired, it seems like your major critique with the system isn't so much the court itself, but the overall system, mm-hmm. I mean the overall justice system. So, is that correct?
Yeah.
So, would you, if given the opportunity, what would you change about the system to make it much more diverse, make it more...
Well, I think one of the things that has happened in the court system itself has been the educational, the education and the opening up of the system by the court system. I think more of that is always necessary and needed. I think that the more informed that you have, the more sensitive people are to the situation, and the more they understand that we are public servants, we are public servants. We're here to serve the public in the capacity of giving them a sense of security in that they will have a place to come to get their issues adjudicated so that they will not believe that they have no recourse and do things that would disrupt society rather than help society. So the court system should be seen as a user-friendly place for people to come to resolve their disputes, rather than as a place where they're going to be dumped on. I mean, so you want to open up the system so people utilize the system more rather than taking things into their own hands and however they do it, you know. So for resolving disputes. So, and I think the only way you can do that is if people feel comfortable about court system. And even though they may lose, they want to know that they heard, their cases were heard, and the person that heard them was an open and fair person, ruling on the facts in the case, nothing else. And that's the kind of image that I think the court wants to put out there. And I think that you're striving to do that.
Do you feel you were able to maintain the level of independence that you've mentioned throughout the interview? I mean,
oh, absolutely. I absolutely think that I was able to maintain a level of independence. I think that, you know, because any time that I felt that was challenged, I asserted it, be it with my, you know, in the court system you have tiers of supervision, but be it with my immediate, what they call them, presiding judges, or with the chief judge. We had access to speak our mind to the chief judge. He's the judge over all of the systems. You could always address that issue. And yes, I absolutely believe that I was able to do it because I wasn't influenced by any of those things. Absolutely. And I think more and more judges feel that way too. I mean, there is always the undercurrent, you know, in a system. There's always a dialectic, the give and take, the pull and the push. But there's always a surge down the middle for people to move and maintain a certain level. And I think those forces interplay on each other. And depending on what the leadership is and what the climate is, that's how the people move. I think right now we're in a climate where people feel that they can express themselves, they can address these issues, and they can they're not stymied by external influences. They know what their job is, they know what their flexibility is, and they kind of like move in that direction. Or at least that's what I did. You know, I can speak for myself.
So in order for a community to become more involved, especially in the judicial system, and with your comments that you said about how there needs to be, or there should be, an overall change in the system, not just in if there was a problem with the court, but in the overall criminal justice system, what would you advise for community leaders or people of influence in a community? What do you think that they would need to do in order to create this change?
Well, you know, change always starts, most people think change is top down. I think change is bottom up. And I think that the people need to speak to the issues. I mean, there's a great deal of complacency in society as a whole. And even though some of the stuff is like upfront and in your face, you find people retreating, and they do that for a lot of reasons. They do it out of insecurity for whatever their job situation is, and they just based upon their education or their ethnic or social background, they have a tendency not to want to confront the issues that impact them on a daily basis. So you will find in certain communities where the police is being over aggressive, you will find people not moving on that. I think that people need to speak to these issues politically. They need to vote. They need to express themselves in the process so that they elect people who reflect what they're talking about. But because of the pervasiveness of suppressing people, for instance, the Hispanic community, they have the immigration issue, you know, and they don't want to deal with that. That means that people are going to be able to exploit them on that issue rather than, and they're not going to feel comfortable no matter how much you say, well, you need to get out, you need to, you know, register vote, you need to, you know, go through the process. They're not going to do it because they are afraid. They're afraid of the fact that they're going to get deported, and they make that a big issue in the community. Well, if you do this, this is going to happen. If you do that, that's going to happen. You know, while I believe that that the appropriate thing for people to do who've come in this country is to go through the process, I don't think people should be, terrorized about, you know, moving out as a result of that. I definitely believe that the process is important, and I believe that we should open up avenues for that to happen, for people to be able to get their credentials so that they can fully participate in society. I think they need to follow the law, but I also believe that there needs to be something open for them to access what they need to do to be, full citizens in the country. I think it's like a two-sided kind of thing. So I think that the best way for change to happen is for the people to make it happen. And I think that only education and I think government has a role in providing that. And I think each individual also has a role in doing that. So that is why I involve myself in community activities. That's why I participate in, you know, educational forums. That's why I, you know, I do volunteer work at school districts to, you know, and I think you start with the children. So, you know, that's what I think.
So overall, your impression of the circuit court seems to be pretty positive. I mean, you had the opportunity to express your independence. You could speak to your peers about issues in the court. You were able to bring in that community involvement. Is there anything that you would want to say further about your experience that we haven't covered?
I think that, you know, this experience for me personally was a very dynamic one. It certainly changed, it certainly was life-altering in terms of my education and, you know, the things that people have brought. And I believe that you can make that experience happen if you take advantage of the things that are there. I think that there's probably, you know, with everything, you know, there is the good and the bad, and I think we all have to be cognizant of that tension and not get complacent. And you know, you see progress, but there's always ways for more progress. And so I think that's true with the court system, too. I think there's been progress, but I think there is room for more progress. I think there is room for, you know, more sensitivity training, more education, more all of those things that make society function, you know, at an appropriate level. And so what I'm doing in my assessment is I'm looking from the narrow view of, you know, what my experiences were. And like I said, I had challenges, but, you know, I was able to work those out. My narrow experiences, but how that has impacted the overall question. So, I apparently wanted to do something different. That is why I retired. I had 3 more years on my. I'm retained to 2010, so I could have stayed until 2010 without having to do another election. But because I have other interests and. I didn't want my last experience to be my judicial experience. You know, I just wanted to see what else was available out. And I wanted to free myself from the restrictive nature of being, you know, one of the real issues with being a judge is the restrictions you have because you have to be impartial. You know, you can't have political speech. You can't, I mean, the canons does not allow you to do it because you don't want people to feel that your personal experiences is influencing you anyway. So, you know, I may feel very strongly about abortion, but I certainly couldn't go out and do an abortion clinic. I may feel very strongly about a political issue that's going on, but I can't go out and pick it because I'm a judge, and because if some kind of conflict comes up, I may have to hear that issue. So we have to restrict our public speech. We have to restrict our... So one of the reasons that you want to do something else is so you can have greater, you know, flexibility in moving about and doing what you do, because you do have to maintain a certain level of restricted decorum as a judge. Like he indicated, I would never give this interview. I would never have this discussion with you if I was sitting on the bench, because you don't want that personal stuff to be a part, or your opinion, or what you think. You don't want that. But now that I'm not on the bench, I can tell you what I think. So that's the restrictive nature of being a judge, because you have to always appear to be impartial, not have a view about anything. And if you have one, you don't want it to become, you know, because people knowing people, they're going to think you have biases, you know, and it's very hard to strike that balance. It's very, very difficult to strike that balance.
How was trying to strike that balance for those 15 years?
It's a growing process. You know, it is a growing process. And having had experience as a lawyer, I had a concept about how I wanted to be treated as a lawyer and how I wanted my case to be heard. So I tried to convey that and do that. I never wanted to walk in a courtroom and feel that the judge had a predisposition about an issue or a person. I didn't want them to give deference to anyone. I wanted to walk up and feel that when I made a presentation, I was heard. And that's the way I conducted my courtroom, all the time. And if I found that I was having any difficulty in making that because of the parties, the issue, I recused myself. I didn't do the case. I would say, I'm not going to do the case because I can't. Whenever you recuse yourself, it's saying that there's something about the case that you don't feel comfortable with about making a decision in the matter. And you don't want the parties then to suffer. So you say, I recuse myself. I won't do the case. I've only done that 3 times. And, you know, the times that I've done it is because I either knew the lawyers in the case or I was familiar with the parties, or there was some kind of personal connection with the case. And I don't think you should do those kinds of cases, even though I think even in those situations, I could have been objective, but what you had to deal with as a judge is the appearance of an impropriety. You know, and if people felt, if it was something that people could feel uncomfortable with, you didn't need to do it. So that was the basis.
Now that you don't have to worry about those problems, what kind of plans do you have now that you've retired?
Well, one of the things that I've done, I've been doing, is doing an extensive amount of travel. I've been going to places that I did not have the time to spend, the kind of time that I wanted to do there. And I'm also going to be doing mediation and arbitration cases. I've affiliated with a company called JAMS, and I'll be doing that. In addition, I'm involved in another history project on the I'm on the State Commission for the Study of the Transatlantic Slave Trade, which is a national kind of thing, and I'm participating in that, and I'm giving that a lot of my energy and time to look at that particular question. And I'm doing some volunteering, and I'm going to pick up some more interest in this project, which I tend to. So.
Well, best of luck in all of your endeavors. I think that concludes all the questions
okay.
we have.
Oh, great.
I can't thank you enough for your time.
My pleasure. I didn't even know I knew this much stuff about myself. That's one of the things you don't do as a judge, is talk about yourself. But I understood what your purpose was, so I was trying to give you the kind of information you needed, because I think this kind of project gives people greater insight into, you know, what the judicial process is about, the kind of people. And I think we have on the bench, you know, the people who come, they're all overachievers, you know, just at different levels, you know, just at different levels. You know, you have some who are underachievers and who are political hacks, but we don't get a lot of that anymore. We get people who are genuinely, you know, well-educated, all interested in what they're doing, and very diverse in their view. So.
Well, again, thank you very much, and best of luck.
Thank you.